Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back. It's my pleasure to welcome Pasha Roberts to the show. He is the creator of an upcoming movie entitled Silver Circle, and this movie is about the Federal Reserve and our monetary system and really some very interesting topics. It's set in the future, and he'll give you the exact date of where it's set, and he's coming to us today from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Pasha, how are you?
Well, hello. How are you, Jason? Good. Thanks for having us on.
Well, my pleasure. So tell us about Silver Circle and what inspired you to make a movie. I guess you're not in the movie business as your background, right?
No, but I mean, I've run an animation studio, so that we started in around 2002, something like that, to describe complicated financial information. And really when the 2008 Lehman Brothers crash happened, when the little mini crash happened, I call it in 2008, we decided that we could make a really interesting fictional story going out into the future. And we also decided that, you know, there's plenty of documentaries out there. If you want to tell people about, you know, the risks of fiat money or the history of what happens in inflation or hyperinflation, you know, there's plenty of factual information out there, but it was more interesting and more broad-based and more fun, actually, to make this a fictional story, make it a thriller romance with, you know, the car chases and the explosions and the romance and the intrigue. And so that's what we did. I mean, so really, you know, it's the only movie I know of where the Federal Reserve is the bad guy. And there's a group of rebels, you know, that are making their own money out of silver and fighting the Federal Reserve during this, you know, heavy dollar crash kind of era in 2019.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, so it's set in 2019, and without spoiling it for everybody, tell people basically maybe first what your thesis is behind the movie and what happens. Well, basic outline of what happens, not too much detail.
Sure. I mean, basically in the movie, it's heavy economic crash. We don't do hyperinflation. The screenwriter that I worked with, Stephen Schwartz, he actually lived in Argentina during hyperinflation. And so he was ready to, you know, he's familiar with going out and changing the peso midday and, you know, and what's really involved in that. But the dynamics of hyperinflation are too strange for most people to even entertain. We only made the prices 20 times what they are now.
And that's interesting. I want to just stop you there for a moment. There's no actual academic definition of hyperinflation, which I find kind of odd that there isn't one. But if you say 20 times multiple on prices, in other words, whatever costs you $5 today, you go to a bar and a beer costs $5, well, there's not even many of those around. Most bars are $8 for a beer.
Well, in our world, beer is $110.
Yeah, so there you go. So it becomes $100. A $5 item becomes $100. Now, most people might consider that hyperinflation, but I've just got to ask you, since you don't, what do you call hyperinflation? Do you have a name for it?
I think it has to do with the rate. You know, I mean, hyperinflation is what we see in something like Zimbabwe or Argentina, where every day there's a different set of prices. Market, you know, prices might double in a day. We have a pretty interesting interview with a really cool guy from Zimbabwe on our website where he talks about what it's like, you know, both going on the grand black market, getting money, but also, you know, how they did marketing and how they did prices and how everything worked when things are so unpredictable with prices. So that's, if you go out every morning and have no idea where things are and you have to talk around, so you get rates of 1,000% a year or you know, a million times a year of inflation in that. You know, in this case, you know, we really could have a much smaller, but yet still historically, you know, significant amount, you know, between 20 and 50% inflation every year. We'd got to easily get us to this 20 times that we talk about in the movie.
So what happens to people in their life? I mean, when that latte at Starbucks goes from, it's a little more than $4, I guess. They call it $4
rather than Starbucks. I haven't bought one for a long time.
Yeah. But you know, that when that becomes $100, I mean, what happens to people? That must just be an amazing, that's just hard for most people to comprehend really what the meaning of that is, what the real meaning is.
Yeah, well, people's wages go up too, but it never keeps up. I mean, you know, you get raises every, you know, I'm sure your reviews would happen every month or something in hyperinflation, but, you know, but it never really keeps up. I mean, the nature, if inflation was always equal, where every price went up everywhere at the exact same time, it wouldn't really matter. Where it does matter, Rothbard goes through this, is that timing, that first people to use and access and get the money is the people who print it, which is the government and the banks. And so they get the full benefit of this new money. And then by the time prices adjust months later, that's when, you know, we kind of get shafted. You know, and so what happened in the movie, you know, people that have been saving up their entire life, we try to humanize this. You know, our hero's father, you know, basically loses his whole life savings because he saved up money and he's ready to retire and it's all gone. So we really try to make it a human thing. And you know, also there's heavy unemployment during situations like this because businesses have extreme volatility and can't hire people reliably.
Yeah, that's just amazing. You know, the stories from history about hyperinflation are how people would rush out to spend their money before it loses value. So when they would get paid, they would instantly leave work and go and try to buy things with it. And one of my theses has always been that things have real meaning. They have intrinsic value, whereas paper fiat currencies don't. So I'm a commodities hard asset kind of thinker when it comes to my own investment portfolio. You know, I always say denominate your assets in things and denominate your liabilities in fiat currencies that are being debased by inflation. It's pretty interesting. I mean, I don't think people really comprehend, and you know, like any experience in human life, how bad it is and how demoralizing it can be until you're in it. Yet, like you said, the first people that have access to the benefits of these things are the elites, the inner circle that basically runs the game, or at least knows how to game the system and play the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way it works and it's designed to work. And it, you know, we try to make it a human thing and try to make it interesting and fun. And the movie, you know, fun is maybe a relative word, but it's a, you know, the rebels are kind of a fun group of people in there. The reason silver is involved is we like the idea of competing currencies where, you know, the rebels make their own illegal currency out of silver to compete against the dollar. But it could be, you know, Walmart could have their dollars or Chinese yuan could be running around, all kinds of different things. And if they are allowed to float against the dollar, legally or illegally, then, you know, it can start to bring some reason to people's lives in terms of having a currency that makes sense instead of a runaway fiat currency. What always happens in these situations, though, is that the central bank really has to crack down against the competing currencies because they can't have that. Because it will, any competition will basically crush their own currency. They know they'll lose in a competition of currencies. So that's, you know, the nature of the conflict between the rebels with their silver money and, you know, the other. I don't have a strong opinion of gold versus silver. It's just silver is a,
well, it's more tradable because it's so
more
much
tradable.
Less expensive.
You can buy a cup of coffee with it.
Right, exactly.
In fact, I have whole economies in New Hampshire. You know, where, you know, there are silver-backed currencies and events where Yeah, I've been to events where they didn't accept Federal Reserve notes. They only took silver as money.
Right, right. And interestingly, some of those groups like that have been raided and people have been arrested for violating what is known as the legal tender laws, where you have to accept the fake money. The law requires you to accept the fake money. It says right on the dollar bill that this is valid for all debts, public and private. And if you were to open a store and say that you don't accept dollars, you only accept silver and gold, you can go to jail for that. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, I mean, since we started, I mean, Bernard Vernothaus with the Liberty Dollar, you know, has gone to prison, and I think he's still there. You know, so it's many aspects of the movie really have real in the process of just trying to get this thing done.
Well, what happens to the rebels in the movie? I mean, do they go to jail? I mean, are they central banks like the Federal Reserve? They hate gold and silver. It's competition for their fake currencies. They don't want people trading in that.
No, they don't. I mean, we have the Coin Act of 2016, which makes that illegal. So, owning gold as a citizen used to be, it was illegal in my lifetime. In 1971, it only became legal. So it's, you know, this is not unheard of at all.
Right, right. But so when you say the Coin Act of 2016, now, of course, 2016 hasn't occurred yet.
Right.
So what is the Coin Act of 2016 in the future, this future act?
It basically makes trading in, only the government is allowed to make coins or any kind of money out of gold or silver. So it makes alternative currencies out of precious metals illegal.
Well, why would the government ever make that legal, though? Because they're in bed with the Federal Reserve. I mean, they wouldn't want to ever see that be legal, would they?
Well, it currently is legal. I mean, you know, I can, you know, go out and buy something with, or, you know, basically barter with a piece of silver. It's difficult because of capital gains, you know, all those other laws come in.
Yeah. And I just want to make the distinction there. It is legal to trade with gold and silver. However, if you're a business, you have to accept dollars as well. You can't
for
say
pre-existing debts.
Yeah, right.
But if you're a store, if you're selling somebody a hamburger, the debt doesn't exist until they grab the hamburger.
Oh, now that's an interesting distinction. So you think that would actually hold up? Because I've heard about raids on these groups. I wonder how they attacked that.
Because credit cards are not legal tender either. So, because the debt doesn't exist until, you complete the transaction. So, but I do think that, there's going to be some interesting electronic age things, you know, if you sort of cross Bitcoin with silver or gold, or, you know, electronic money with hard backing is pretty interesting. It's an interesting kind of thing. You know, I also think that when we get the heavy inflation, it's going to be probably faster and more well communicated because of the internet. You know, you can have prices updated across the country, kind of like we have with gasbuddy.com or something, where gas prices are, you know, instantaneously across the world.
Sure.
So one thing that may be of interest to real estate people is we do have this thing in the movie called the Strategic Housing Reserve, which is from the Department of Housing Stability.
Which is a new department now.
It's a new department to be made of, yeah. Although Federal Reserve in reality are fast on our tail. Apparently people in Ireland have tried it with very bad results, and there's, you know, minor versions of it going on in Detroit now. But basically we have the Federal Reserve, in order to protect the economy and hold up housing prices and create jobs, they basically buy up entire neighborhoods with fake money or use eminent domain with their own police and push people out. And that's the opening scene of the movie, is an eviction. Where they take over whole neighborhoods and expand and contract the supply of houses in different neighborhoods to prop up housing prices across the country. Because, as you know, housing prices are so central to many people's wealth that that's a primary gripe point. It's like gas.
Yeah, that's interesting. So tell us more about the Department of Housing Stability. So they basically come in and they seize people's houses in order to reduce supply then?
Right. It's like farmers to burn their crops. So they have these ghost towns or these ghost neighborhoods of houses that that they maintain, and if housing prices start going up or down, they either, you know, they sell houses out of that neighborhood to increase the supply and drive the price down, or vice versa, if housing prices need to go the other way. But it's a interesting way. And also, as you point out, they're holding on to all those commodities and the assets, the nails and the wood and everything else in the, that are in the houses.
Let me take a brief pause. We'll be back in just a minute.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about some cool new investor software, there's a show for that. If you want to learn why Rome fell, Hitler rose, and Enron failed, there's a show for that. If you want to know about property evaluation technology on the iPhone, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know how to make millions with mobile homes, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
That's interesting. See, that's another reason that if a Department of Housing Stability ever does come into being, and this is some group that goes around and it basically just confiscates property, which the government can confiscate anything you have. There is simply no trump card. There's no foolproof way to make sure that that never happens, whether it be guns, dollars, gold, silver, houses, your business, anything. I mean, one of my former employees grew up in Burma, now Myanmar. And at the time, and it's interesting because Myanmar just opened up again and is becoming a free market economy, is on their way there, they say. And that's exciting. But at the time that they became communist and the Chinese came in, and I believe that was in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken, he said that he remembered when that happened, and his parents had a business, and they came in, one soldier accompanied an accountant, and they came into your business, and they wanted to see the books, and they basically started taking control of your business, and they demonetized the higher pieces of currency so that people only had pocket change with them. For example, in our world, they would demonetize the $100 bill and demonetize the $50 bill. So all of the, now this was before the days of credit cards, obviously, and I doubt an economy like that even has much credit even today in a free market world. But they would just demonetize the higher bills, which people use to store their wealth, and say, they're worth nothing, they're meaningless now, just by fiat, just by authority, we're going to decide that this is a meaningless instrument all of a sudden. So the government can take anything away from you. But the lesson there is, don't own your real estate with cash. Don't own 100% equity in it. Just have 20% equity in it, or as small amount as you can, because then it's more the bank's risk than yours, right?
Right, because then the bank is taking the equity risk and the political risk in that, and you're sort of leveraged out, so... It's an interesting approach. I mean, there's definitely that kind of devaluation has happened, and across history. And in Zimbabwe, for example, several times they redenominated the currency. They just lopped off 3 or 6 zeros off of the currencies. I have like $100 trillion bill here in my office from Zimbabwe.
One of our listeners from Ireland sent me $180 trillion in Zimbabwe dollars. I have them in my drawer somewhere, and I thought that was a really generous gift, and I looked it up, and they sell them on eBay for about $4. So,
and that's the most it's ever been worth. I mean, it's really, it was worth a loaf of bread pretty much as soon as it came out. And in Argentina, I mean, basically the government froze all foreign-denominated accounts and revalued it at a horrible rate. So if you were smart enough to keep your dollars and keep your money in U.S. dollars instead of pesos, they would just freeze that account and change it over to their benefit. So in some of these cases, I don't really know the way out, unless you keep the gold under your mattress or something like that.
But even then, there's really no ultimate way out. The government can do anything they want. That's why the government needs to be kept in check always. We need to be forever vigilant about that.
Well, that's the kind of thing we cover in the movie. That's what the rebels are. That's their business.
So tell us, maybe just give out one or two things that the rebels do to try and keep the powers that be in check.
Well, I mean, certainly part of it is they draw attention to the strategic housing reserve and, some of the insanity that's inside of that. And they're really their main mission in the movie. You have to keep it pretty simple, and it's only a 90-minute movie, is in terms of making this money and putting out these silver the silver-based currency as an alternative. I mean, that's their main thing, and that's really the worst thing you can do to the Federal Reserve. You know, the only reason that U.S. dollar is held up is by trust. When you lose that trust, there's nothing left in the dollar.
What are your thoughts about the Federal Reserve? I mean, there have been so many moves now, especially with Ron Paul, to audit it. A lot more people are aware nowadays than they were even 5 years ago. When I used to talk about this stuff at real estate investing seminars I would do, even 5 years ago, it was kind of like a really abstract kind of foreign concept to people, sort of a conspiracy theory type thing. But nowadays, it seems pretty mainstream. Everybody seems to know about this nowadays. So I guess that's really good news, right?
It's good news for us, I mean, for the movie. we were a lot less crazy sounding than we were just a few years ago when we got this thing started. And, you know, I mean, part of it is the way that it's talked about. And I think Ron Paul had done a good job in terms of making it more normal. I do have some of the real fringy Federal Reserve literature, and you know, some of it can look pretty strange, but at essence, it's also true. So, you know, I tend to think of it, you know, since we do a lot of work we try to talk outside of the choir. We go to comic book conventions and animation festivals and that kind of thing to promote our movie. It's not just for the believers. And in many ways, you know, the Federal Reserve is like the ultimate comic book bad guy. It's very James Bond. It's this secret society that's existed for 100 years, and I think it'll be 100 years in a little bit later this month, actually. And at that, you know, and it controls the whole world's money supply. It's bigger than any James Bond hero and more secret.
Totally amazing. Totally amazing. Well, where will the movie be released first?
We're going to do basically, it's called a platform release. We, you know, adding, we're starting it in March. I think the first release is going to be in New York. And then we're planning on adding Austin, Texas, and Washington, D.C., and somewhere up around here in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, where a lot of our fans are. And we'll just keep adding cities to it as long as we can fill the theaters and convince everybody that it's an awesome story. And that is, you know, part of it. It's, you know, not just about the money or a wonky kind of thing. It's a really fun romance, clever story that a lot of people just enjoy for the sake of the story. It's not really only this wonky economic stuff. You know, we showed it at a comic convention in New Orleans a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, half the audience didn't know a hoot about all this money stuff. They just had a good time, you know, and they're laughing and crying and on the edges of their seat through the whole thing. So that's kind of what we're going for. And then those people might actually look up and see what this Federal Reserve thing really is.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because I sort of wonder if you were inspired at all to approach it this way by, you know, Ayn Rand's novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. You could read that and not even be that concerned about the whole big government message or you know, the free market message, but also got a great story angle.
Yeah, I've definitely read her stuff, and you know, it does take some dedication to get through the
well, so long. Yeah, the length is one thing, but
so you know. Yeah. So we, you know, and my heart goes out to the people trying to make movies out of Ayn Rand. I mean, just because it's so dense, but it's, you know, we have the benefit that we're a screenplay first. You know, but yeah, I mean, I really have appreciated and learned from her approach to use the narrative, to use fiction as a part of it. And, you know, I think that's, you know, it's sometimes the way that through to somebody's mind is through their heart.
Yep, it certainly is. It certainly is. And if not through their heart, then through their stomach at least, right?
Right. Well, I can't make food for everybody.
Yeah,
so
that's for sure. Well, hey, Pasha, give out the website, if you would, and tell people, you know, where they can see the trailer and you know, get a little bit of information about the movie.
Sure. We have a lot of material online. I know the Federal Reserve enjoys watching it, so your readers and listeners probably should too. It's SilverCircleMovie.com. So SilverCircleMovie.com, just one word. And there's a website and trailers and all kinds of information there. There's also a mailing list that'll let you know when we're coming to what theater in your area. Eventually, it should be in theaters across the whole U.S. And then there's also a very active blog with some of the ideas of the movie. We cover some things that'll be in the future. We're already working on a sequel. So we cover some things that are in the sequel, like drones and that kind of a thing. And that's silverunderground.com. So if they appreciate your work, I'm sure they would find some insight in Silver Underground as well. So those are our two main websites. We have a very active Facebook community, just over 15,000 people on it, and a lot of Twitter, a lot of all the social. We're just a small, scrappy movie studio, so we're just hard at work using social media any way we can.
Good stuff. Well, Pasha Roberts, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for getting the word out about the Federal Reserve Ponzi scheme. It's not exactly a Ponzi scheme, it sort of is, but anyway, it's a scheme nonetheless. But the Federal Reserve scheme, and I just appreciate you increasing the awareness of this very, very important subject. So thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thank you, Jason. I appreciate the excellent work that you do with all of your different sites, and all the best to your listeners.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.